2009 was a rough year for Aaron Drew. My parents had recently divorced. I was 26. I was in between jobs and in many jobs and in between relationships, many relationships. And I was partying pretty hard every weekend and making stupid decisions. Nothing too stupid, but stupid enough. And I needed a change of pace. I needed to break my cycle, and I'm a little bit of an extreme person. So breaking the cycle for me was moving to Los Angeles from Baltimore. So I just decided, okay, well, I'm going to go to Los Angeles, and I'm going to live there, everyone, because I need to change my life. So I hopped in my 2005 Hyundai Sonata, which was barely working, and by the time I got to LA, I had $300 in my bank account, that's it, to my name, and some debt, and a couch to stay on from my very good friends who were out there, college roommates, and that's it. And after, like, the rice and beans and the pasta and the beers, and by the time I got a job, I had $42.34 in my bank account, so I was like, well, this isn't going to work. So I was applying to job after job after job after job on Craigslist, and I finally found one. It was an open interview, which was great because they couldn't reject me over the phone, and I showed up in Santa Monica at a restaurant called R&D Kitchen. I hope I don't get in trouble for saying that, but whatever, if I do, screw those guys. R&D Kitchen was in a very posh neighborhood in Santa Monica. It was nestled in a neighborhood, you know, where Vanna White and the Wilson brothers and Steven Spielberg and other celebrities had frequented. I don't know if this is why the restaurant took themselves so seriously, but they took themselves very seriously. I did not. And so I showed up. My air conditioner was broken. Of course it was, and I couldn't afford to fix it. It was very hot. It was August, at the end of August, and I showed up, like, very sweaty and with the zit on my face, and the cover-up was, like, slipping off, and I really just didn't look like I fit in that neighborhood at all. So I got to the restaurant, and really, the human Jasmine from Aladdin welcomed me with her flowing hair and was like, "Welcome to R&D Kitchen. How can I help you?" And I was like, "Yikes, here for the job application. Can I get one of those?" And there was like people lined up outside the restaurant for a job, and I was like, "This is terrible." So she gave me one, and I filled it out, which was great. Somebody read it, and then they said, "Okay, now you can come here. We're going to give you the reading test." And I was like, "A reading test, okay." So I took a reading test. Now here's the math test. All right, Jasmine, like, it's getting a little unreal in here. Like, why? Okay, reading test, math test. And then that was followed by a personality test, which somehow I passed. And then I got to interview with not one, not two, but three managers. So at this point, I should have been like, wild mushroom meatloaf and burgers and fries really aren't worth this. But I had $42 in my pocket, so I had to keep going. This was the most traumatic job that I've ever had in my life. It was terrible. I had to go to training every day, and if you didn't pass the written test that gave all the ingredients to every single food and every single item and drink, then you failed and you couldn't come back the next day, and you were ridiculed in the back by all the other servers who had been there a long time. So as someone who suffers from a generalized anxiety disorder, that, like, really didn't help my quality of life at all out there. So I cried every day in my car. And, you know, don't feel bad for me. Like, clearly I made this decision to, like, go out to California, but this is a really unfortunate situation. So anyway, so I didn't really make any friends because I constantly was an anxious ball, like, just walking around, like, can I help you? What can I do? Like, wait, and people are like, whoa, calm down, Aaron. Like, why are you so, you know, trainers would come up to me at the end of the day, are you all right? Like, I don't know if you can make it. Are you R&D material? And I'm like, I don't think so, but I only have $42. So I ended up working really hard. I finally got out of my, like, one table section and was like graduated to like 3-2 tops. And I gave like a carryout bag to Larry David. I felt really cool sometimes, but what happened was Christmas time was coming, and so I had been in the job for like 3 months, and I was like feeling pretty good, like confident. Like I started kind of making jokes with like one of the girls on staff who made jokes, and and I was like, oh, cool. So like maybe we could be friends, and everybody else is still really rude and mean to me. But and the guests and stuff were horrible too. They were like very entitled people. A lot of them. Some of them were nice if they ever listened to this podcast. You know, they like counted their ice cubes and like, you know, wanted to know why a garnish was the way it was and if I could get them more french fries and things that we didn't even have in the restaurant. And I was like, we don't even have that, so I don't know what, you know. And then a manager would say, you get them whatever they want. I'm like, I don't, all right, well, so anyway, things are going really well. Things are not going well. Okay, so what happened was I was there for 3 months. Christmas rolls around. Everyone's going home for Christmas. I cannot go home for Christmas because I am very poor still. Very poor. So I pick up 18 shifts in 14 days, which is against California state law, apparently. And I didn't know that. I truthfully, honestly didn't know that. But no one said anything because, hey, this girl's willing to work illegally all these hours, but we have no one else, so let's just let her do that. And so I did. And Christmas in California was a lot different than Christmas in Baltimore in that it was 70 degrees and didn't feel like Christmas at all. And so I was feeling extra lonely and homesick, and I really missed my family, and I couldn't see my breath outside, and I was still sweating when I got to work, and all of these things made me feel very lonely, especially when I spent most of my time in a place that I really wanted to burn down. So what happened was, I work all these shifts, and I'm working my butt off, and Christmas Eve comes, and I have to close on Christmas Eve. And this was very sad because my family, my favorite thing about Christmas is Christmas Eve is for as long as I can remember. Everybody comes over to the house that I grew up in, uncles, aunts, Pop, Graham, Norma, everybody comes over, and we have hot alcoholic beverages and crab cakes and filet mignon and potatoes and lots of things that I love. And everyone is just kind of all around being jovial. And my favorite tradition is someone in the family reads The Night Before Christmas. And someone reads it and shows the pictures as if we've never seen it before. And then the whole family chimes in, now Dasher, now Dancer, now Prancer. You know, so that's one of my favorites. And I had gotten one of those books from Hallmark where you can, like, read the story and they can, when they open it, they hear your voice. Because I wanted to feel like I was there. And so, anyway, so I'm in R&D Kitchen on Christmas Eve. It's kind of empty, and the neighborhood was heavily Jewish, and so, like, there wasn't a lot of Christmas stuff going on. I think there was, like, some holly around, maybe, some ribbon, and so, so I was like, hey, Vista, my 22-year-old manager hailing all the way from Laguna Beach, could I take a break and just go call my family real quick? And she's like, I guess so, make it quick. And I was like, well, you're a bitch, so. So anyway, I go outside, and I call my family, and they put me on speakerphone, and everybody's there, and everybody's so happy, and hey, Aaron, we miss you, we wish you were here. They just listened to the book that I had made them, and I started tearing up, and I just felt so lonely, and so, there's so many cities in between Los Angeles and Baltimore, like, just so many cities, and I was all the way away from them during my favorite time of the year. And so I was tearing up, and I had to say bye to everybody because, you know, Vista would have something to say about it if I didn't. So I hurried up to go inside to an empty restaurant and, you know, wipe down tables. And Vista took this opportunity to then pull me aside and say, I've been meaning to talk to you for a little while about something. I'm like, okay. She's like, your hair has been a little unintentional lately. Now, I really like personifying things. You know, stuffed animals, body parts. Like, I love when things are things that they're not. But my hair being unintentional, as if it got up that day and was like, I'm not doing anything with this, you guys, was super entertaining and also incredibly insulting, and I really just wanted to punch her in the face. But instead, I said, oh, okay, how would you, what do you, how can I rectify this for you, Vista? And she said, do you know how to use a bobby pin? And I was like, it's a bitch. I will straight take you outside about a bobby pin. Okay, I got some thin hair. I don't curl my hair every day like all these other waitresses. I don't put on all the makeup. I don't know how to do it. For Christ's sake, I've had it up in a ponytail. Like, it was standards. But I didn't say that. I said, yes, Vista, I know how to use a bobby pin. I'll use that tomorrow. She's like, great, Erin. That'd be great. So that was just really the nail in the Christmas Eve coffin. So the next day I spent some time with a friend of a friend. And on the 26th, December 26th, I went to work. And at the end of my shift, one of the managers said, hey, Steve, the general manager, wants to see you tomorrow morning. I said, okay. Which was kind of weird. We didn't have performance reviews. I had never been written up for anything. So I go in that morning. Now, it had been rumored, the owner of all the restaurants came in, and it had been rumored that he'll fire somebody as a sacrificial lamb, like, to scare the rest of the staff into working harder, because that's what kind of institution this was. And so I sit down at table 5, and Steve, who looks a little bit like Ryan Seacrest mixed with, like, a cartoon weasel. It's like sitting across from me with a kitchen manager I had never met, and he said, hey, how do you think you're doing here, Erin, at R&D? And I said, you know, fine. It's good. I feel like I'm a part of the team now, and, you know, I'm doing well. It's like, yeah, well, we don't really think you fit the model. You're not really R&D material. And I just felt like I'm not good at confrontation. I just start straight up sobbing if somebody's like angry with me or things are about to go down. And so I start tearing up and I was like, wait, what? I'm not, what? I just worked a lot. Really? And he's like, yeah, I mean, your facial expressions are inconsistent. And I was like, could it be because I'm a human? Facial expressions? Yeah, I think we're going to have to let you go. Let me go? You never worry about this. It was like, we've tried to tell you. Tried to tell me? No, you haven't. We've tried to tell you to smile multiple times. Well, maybe if I wasn't crying in my car every day, it would have worked out. Anyway, it was a very down time in my life. I went into a deep depression for another 3 weeks until I find another job. The point of the story is I'm very, very, very thankful to be in Baltimore for Christmases again, and that when I'm sitting on my mom's couch or when I'm with my dad next week, no one is going to comment on my inconsistent facial expressions or tell me that my hair is unintentional.